It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, as always, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. During this time of the year, as you know, we try to emphasize the pop culture more, lighten things up, enjoy the Christmas season, and what better way to celebrate the gift of Christmas than with the gift of Dana, God's gift to me. He blessed me with her in marriage. And today, I share the gift because that's just the kind of guy I am. I share with you the gift of her charm, the gift of her warmth, the gift of her radiance. I share it with you, but it's only for an hour. Just for an hour, so use the time wisely. Welcome back to our program, sweetheart.
Thank you. I never know what you're going to say. You're just always so...
Well, if I told you ahead of time before we... I'm not going to talk.
I need to start...
I don't rehearse driving over here. I love the spontaneity thing.
I need that to makes start vetting radio. These intros, but...
No. We don't want to go there.
But it is really nice to be here, especially for the season that we're coming up on. And definitely feel like we're going into the Christmas season with more fullness this year. And it just, it's nice to be able to be there. And we thought tonight would be kind of fun to have a focus on Christmas and Christmas memories, traditions, just the things that make the season really wonderful, especially because this year I think we'll be able to really enjoy the season.
Unlike last year when they had all those miserable... Well, people ignored a lot of it. They were saying, don't have more than five people in your home, blah, blah, blah. Most people I know just ignored it. I ignored it. I hope the police aren't waiting for me when the show's over. I ignored it.
You know what? You may have ignored it, but it was kind of still in the back of your mind.
Well, you were always wondering, what's it going to be next? What idiotic regulation is going to be next?
Yeah, and fortunately, last year, Christmas was warm, so we were able to have ours out in the patio
Have it on the patio, and if you're inside, have the portions already cut. And I'm going, gee, anything else?
Yeah, so it was different. It was a little bit of a change. But this time, as we come into this Christmas, we're really looking forward to just celebrating and honoring. And there's a lot of Christmas that is already happening here in San Diego. For today, I think it'd be fun to go back and talk about memories or traditions of Christmas. And for me, Christmas was really magical. And I grew up in the San Bernardino Mountains, where Forest Home is.
Wait a minute. You didn't grow up in a log cabin in the state of Kentucky? Oh, wait. I always confuse your testimony with Abraham Lincoln's. I'm sorry, honey.
Go ahead. Not even close. Continue. I did grow up in the mountains in cabin. Right. It was a log cabin.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, that's like Lincoln. You had
with
the
a
cabin,
stone fireplace. And it had a two-room schoolhouse. That's where I went to school for elementary.
Like back to the Puritan days.
It was. And what was fun about that, where we had a first through third grade class, and then we had a fourth through sixth grade class. And for any other grades, you had to get on a bus and go. There's a 45-minute drive down the mountain on a bus to go to a junior high or high school. So I was in a two-room schoolhouse. The other kind of trippy thing about that was the upper grade teacher for fourth, fifth, and sixth grade was my very own mother. So my mom taught me during the day, and then she was my teacher at school. And then
now, you've told me this, but tell our audience, what was it like when your mother and your teacher were the same person? Because I can't imagine that would be real fun. And I love your mom. Your mom's great, but I can't imagine for any kid that would be a whole lot of fun.
Well, my mom actually handled it in a really unique way that I'm not sure most people would have thought of. But my mom kept the lines very clear. And when we were at school, she was my teacher. And when we were at home, she was my mom. So if I was at school and, you know, say we're after school, I'm just hanging around, and I'd say, so what, you know, what are we having for dinner tonight? She'd say, I don't know. You'll have to go home and ask your mom.
Oh, that's interesting.
So she really did keep the lines. If I was at home and I needed help on an assignment and I had forgotten the assignment or something that was my responsibility that I should have known, my mom would not tell me what it was, even though she knew. She would say, well, I don't know. You're going to have to ask your teacher tomorrow. So she, by doing that, she built the structure for me that I couldn't be relaxed at school and go, oh, well, I'll just ask my mom when I get home. I don't have to listen. Or she didn't cross the lines at school where I would have more private conversations with her or have more personal information. And that was actually really, it did define things. I think it also helped other kids too, because they saw us really as teacher, student at school.
So she, and as far as discipline or correcting you, obviously there were no special favors that you were a kid.
No, actually, I feel like I got a little harsher.
Right. Well, now,
because she was trying to prove.
But if she went a little harsher to try to prove something, then ironically, she wouldn't have really been treating you the same way she treated the others, even though she may have been.
But as far as I didn't get away with anything,
I mean, did you ever go home and she'd continue it and she'd say, now let me talk to you as your mother about what you did in
class.
There
was one.
This was one mother that didn't need a note from the teacher because she already had the note in her head.
There was one main incident that was, I still am embarrassed to even share that this happened, but we had this lunch lady that everybody adored. We loved her. And remember, there's only two rooms to this schoolhouse. So there was like three picnic tables out in front of the school and we'd all sit on them. And we had lunch ladies that would come, and which meant another mom in the canyon would come and supervise us at lunch. So my mom and the other primary teacher could have their lunch break and get ready for the afternoon instruction. And so we had this one we adored and loved for years and years and years. And for whatever reason, it changed. I don't know why. And they brought in another mom. Well, this mom was lowering the boom on us, and we just kind of got into that mob mentality of rebelling. And so we were, it's terrible. I can't believe I'm sharing this. We were banging on the picnic tables, yelling.
Is your mom listening tonight? Did you tell her to listen?
No, I didn't tell my mom
to
listen.
Why not?
It's good she's not listening.
She might have been one of our callers with her own version of this story.
No, but the whole reason I was telling this was because we did kind of create this little riot at lunch in protest of this lunch, new lunch mom that was not as friendly with
us. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to somebody who went on to become both a school teacher and a principal. And now she's telling stories of little riots she was arranging when she was a kid.
Well, the part that was difficult was not only did we get seriously taken care of by my mom as a class group. I mean, she brought us in and just let us have it. My mom was very good at that. We were absolutely chastised for what we had done at lunch. But then I got home and it started all over again. Now it's my mom. So sometimes it really did come down double on me, but that was the worst one. I really can't believe I shared
that. Where was your dad's role in all this? Did he ever talk to you about something she shared that you did in school, or did she leave him out of it, or how did that work?
Well, he would come to the parent conference and act like it wasn't his wife talking to him. But
so nice to meet you. I'm Don LeComp. Nice
to
meet you, Sheila. Sheila says, that's a wonderful daughter you have there, Don, but there's a few things we need to work on.
They actually would conduct. My mom, again, she was holding that real clear line on, I am the teacher role now. You are the parent. Let me tell you how your daughter is doing. So anyway, all of that to share. I grew up in this really unique, wonderful place. One of the great memories I have for Christmas in this situation was there was one family up the hill, and this mom in this family, she was our substitute teacher. Whenever my mom was sick, which was hardly ever was she absent, or the primary teacher had to be absent for whatever reason, this mom in the canyon who had a credential would come in and be our teacher for the day. We loved her. She was amazing. And it became a tradition every year she would bake a Christmas wreath for each of the teachers as a gift to their families to thank them and so on. So every year we could hardly wait to get Mrs. Bell's Christmas wreath. And I know that probably doesn't sound like that big of a deal, but it was one of those really amazing, like, yeast bread cinnamon.
Her name was Belle. Like
her name
Belle
was Mrs.
Ring.
Bell.
That's a good
yes.
Christmas name.
Yes,
that's
it was Christmas Mrs. name. Bell, and she would make this Christmas.
With her friends Mrs. Tree and Mrs. Ornament, I'm sure they made up a great chorus there.
But it takes a long time to make these. It takes you all day because it is a yeast dough that has to rise two times. It's got cinnamon and sugar and nuts and maraschino cherries. It's just this, and it's made in the shape of a wreath, and it bakes up, and it's beautiful to look at, and it tastes even better.
Well, and you've served them since I've known you. You used to have them when I first came to your house for Christmas before we were married. They made one of those. Yep. They were very good.
It is very good. So Mrs. Bell started this tradition for my family of giving us a Christmas wreath that we would have for Christmas morning. And it was just an amazing thing. So that was one of the benefits of this two-room schoolhouse was the family, the parent community was so grateful to the two teachers. And so they got some pretty spectacular gifts, and we got the benefit of that. And then as I got older, I did find that recipe and so started making it for my family, and that was our Christmas morning treat. So it is fun. So other traditions that we had, and I think for me as a child, I was in a family where my mom and dad taught us that Santa was the real deal. I mean, I absolutely believed in Santa, no doubt. And so I loved it. I loved enjoying that, the magicalness of that. And so I was, I think it was about third grade when my parents decided that I was old enough to be told about Santa. I was so disappointed. I can still remember the letdown of finding out Santa wasn't a real thing.
Okay, we want to hear about this. I always want to hear what it's like for a child when they discover Santa is not the real thing, the trauma, the therapist that needed to be brought in. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Speaking of Christmas, now this did not make a lot of news, but I want to share this with you. A recent discovery was made at another cave in the Judean desert. That's where we discovered the Dead Sea Scrolls, an ancient papyrus scroll with actually clarifying information about the birth of Christ. Now, hold on to your seats. This is fascinating. I found this very interesting when I read this. It turns out that actually there was room at the inn for Joseph and Mary. But the inn was a Motel 6, so they decided they'd rather stay in a stable. Say hello again to Dana Siegel.
Oh, my goodness. That, I don't know where you came up with that one, but...
Oh, I'll tell you where I came up with it. I used to do a lot of traveling evangelism, and when people would put me up at a motel, wanting to be a nice guy and not real fussy, I'd say it could be anywhere, even a Motel 6. But after a while, I had to say it could be anywhere, it could be cheap anywhere, but
except,
a Motel
yes,
6.
I get that. Well, we were talking about how magical Christmas was, for me at least, especially because I truly believe there was a Santa. Hook, line, and sinker went for the whole thing. And when my parents told me that there was no Santa, I was really sad. I just thought, oh, this is just
so how
breaking.
Did they do it? How did they sit you down? How did they preface it? I'm really
they
curious
sat
to
me
hear
down,
how they
and they
did this.
And I think they thought it was a really neat thing they were telling me. Because they were now going to let me help them be Santa for my brother. So that was kind of the bone they threw me was, but you're lucky because you're older and you're going to get to help do Santa Claus for Guy. And I just didn't think that was enough of a perk. And I do remember, I love to sleep. Sleep is always one of my...
So it's like you ruined my illusion, but we get to keep it going for my brother.
And now I have to keep this going for my brother, and he gets to keep going. But I love sleeping. And one of the things Santa did was go to bed. So I would go to bed at my regular kid time. And then my parents would wake me up to go and help put the tangerines and
now,
stuff in the stocking.
How does Santa go to bed when he's got to visit the whole world with his sleigh?
Well, but see, I already knew. So I knew it was, and that was just sad. It was sad to me that
so you mean
it was
fake,
already
the
over.
The fake Santa gets to go to bed, not the real Santa.
No, I'm the fake Santa now because
right.
I'm doing all the tricks for my brother. So that went on for three. He's 3 years younger than I am, so I was Santa for him for 3 years, just helping my parents and whatever. I didn't think that was enough of a perk to have ruined the magic, but whatever.
So it wasn't a perk to say, gee, my dumb brother still believes in Santa Claus, but I don't? That wasn't a perk for you?
No. So when my brother got, and the biggest thing was that I had to make sure I was still talking like there was a Santa anytime I was around my brother and you know, keeping that going for him. Plus, at school, we had to carry that out. My parents told me it was really important to make sure that, you know, you never tell a child if they're saying there's a Santa, you go along with it. Okay, great. So I did that. When my brother got to be third grade and they sat him down to tell him. Now I'm sitting there because I already know. So I'm sitting there thinking, oh man, this is going to be so bummed. So my parents tell my brother, and my brother is not a violent person. I'm not kidding you. He stared at my dad. He just looked at my dad and then he punched my dad in the nose.
You're kidding. Okay, now I know Dana's brother very well. He's the most gentle, peaceful man I've ever met.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Well,
because he felt betrayed.
Well, I think you're just sad. It's disappointing when you find out that Santa isn't there.
Disappointed that there's no Santa and the magic is gone, but was there also a disappointment in the parents for not telling the truth? Was that
part
of it?
I don't think it goes that deep. I think it's just, gosh.
So he might have hit anybody then. If an uncle had been nearby, he might have punched him in the
subject. I think he was just so disappointed. That was the only thing he could think to do and just...
And there is no Santa, there's no elves, so you can't take it out on one of the elves. You got to just take it out on whoever's really in the room.
Yeah, so he actually did what I think I kind of felt, which was like, golly, that's terrible. And so anyway, that's one of our funny family stories is that my brother punched my dad when we told him there was no Santa. So anyway, so that was our childhood. I think it would be interesting at this point to jump over to your childhood.
Oh.
Let's talk about how, as a Jewish family who did have Hanukkah, but then also did Christmas, explain that to us.
And I do an annual Christmas special, which was already repeated this year, where I go through the history of Christmas. And when we get to more modern traditions, I do talk about some of this, but it certainly fits in at this show, too.
Yes,
I won't go into as much detail as I did in the other show. But as you know, I'm Jewish, but I converted to Christianity in my second year of college. As a little kid, first of all, I loved Christmas time. Now, I didn't believe in it. I wasn't taught anything about Jesus. We would sing carols in school about baby Jesus. I didn't understand what any of that meant. I heard words like Son of God and Savior. I just didn't understand that. How could God have a son? And we were an atheistic Jewish family. Judaism's a culture and a race as well as a religion. So we were not really religious Jews. We would celebrate some of the holidays, but it was for tradition. We actually did not celebrate Hanukkah until I got into like the third grade. And it's really interesting. Wow. It's not because my parents loved Christmas. They wanted to do the Jewish holidays, but they thought that if they told me there was no Santa Claus, then I would go to school and tell all the other kids that there was no Santa Claus and that they're pretty stupid for believing in him, which, by the way, is just exactly what I would have done. So they had me pegged. And they didn't want me telling the other kids that there was no Santa Claus, so they had me believe in Santa Claus. And it was very magical. By the time I was in first grade, I started to get suspicious. By the time I was in second grade, my mom finally sat me down. I guess for me, I more or less knew, was hoping it was still true, but I wasn't terribly surprised, so I didn't punch anybody. but I did. I remember in the second grade, there was a little girl that believed in Santa Claus. I said, boy, you're dumb. I think my parents were doing the right thing by putting a muzzle on me for a while. We'll be right back.
This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. If you wanted a guarantee, you should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
Bob Siegel's novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge. The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. And in case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. And this is Dana Siegel, Bob's wife. I'm delighted to join Bob tonight to talk about Christmas memories and traditions. And I'd love a little more clarification about being Jewish, an atheistic Jew, in a home that didn't do Hanukkah until you were third grade, but you did Christmas because your parents wanted to make sure you didn't tell kids.
Yeah. So again, just to clarify, it's not that they didn't want to do Hanukkah, and it's not that they wanted to do Christmas, because after I got older, they never did Christmas again. But they felt that while I was a little kid, if they explained to me, they knew I'd be coming home saying, how come all the other kids believe in Santa Claus? They thought that if they explained to me there was no Santa Claus, I would go and tell the other kids that there was no Santa Claus. So when they finally told me, I was in the second grade, and I just couldn't wait to find some kids in the second grade. And I remember this poor little girl, and I'm looking back, she was a darling, adorable little girl. And I was, you believe in Santa Claus? Oh, man. Boy, are you dumb. So I guess my parents knew me pretty well.
They probably should have saved
it. Well, so, and of course, I guess they figured that by second grade, kids wouldn't still believe, but some still did. But what are you going to do? Wait till I'm in high school, because someone in high school may still believe in Santa Claus. Now, I should say that when I had children, we didn't have a problem with Santa Claus movies. And I've talked on this show before. There was a real St. Nicholas that lived only about 300 years or so after Christ, and he did do some interesting things. And so I don't mind the spirit of a Santa Claus, the idea of it. I certainly don't mind. We didn't mind our kids watching fantasy movies with Santa Claus, but we told them Santa Claus was make-believe. We told them Santa Claus was a game, because we didn't want to compare Santa Claus with God. And that's not what parents try to do, but think about it. Think of even the lyrics of the song. He sees you while you're sleeping. He knows while you're awake. He sees everything. And so what, we're going to sit him down someday. Now, everything we said about Santa Claus being real and seeing you, of course, that was a fairy tale. However, when we talked about God really seeing you, that was really true. I tried to imagine sitting a kid down and doing that. Having said that, since you and I are both people that at one time did believe in Santa Claus, I will admit that it made Christmas much more exciting.
Yeah.
So if you're a parent that has your kid believing in Santa Claus or had your kid believe in Santa Claus, we're not trying to come down hard on you. We're telling you why our parents did it. I'm telling you why I, as a parent, did not do it. Last night, we were at a Christmas carnival at our church, and I was with my grandkids and my daughter and son-in-law. They don't have them believing Santa Claus is a real person. He's make-believe, but they didn't mind going and sitting on Santa Claus's lap and talking to him. He was a really good Santa Claus, too.
He was a great Santa, yes.
Because my granddaughter, Clara, asked for a cat, and I could tell by the look on my daughter Elizabeth's face, a real live cat.
Yikes.
And Santa Claus goes, well, that's a family decision. And I said, boy, it's nice to have an honest Santa Claus. Yeah. So anyway, that's the Santa Claus thing for us.
That is interesting. And so did you guys have a tree and everything? Or?
No.
Oh, no. Our tree.
No.
So just Christmas presents.
There were
presents.
No Christmas decorations. There were Christmas presents.
Okay.
There was no tree. They didn't want... They tried to make it as unlike a real Christmas as they could. They salvaged the Santa Claus myth so that I wouldn't cause havoc in school.
Okay.
Which I did anyway when they finally told me.
So I'm curious, when you were younger, were the Christmas gifts similar to the Hanukkah gifts, and then it just switched and now they were Hanukkah gifts? Or
well, now with Hanukkah, there's 8 nights of Hanukkah,
and did you get all 8?
I got a gift.
Oh, you did.
Every single
okay.
night. I remember cool. some of my friends saying, boy, you only get 8 presents, but
that's
as time went on, I was going, wow, I got 8 presents. And they were good presents. I don't remember the Hanukkah gifts being inferior to the Christmas gifts, and I enjoyed Hanukkah. It was fun to celebrate, and we heard the story, the Hanukkah story. However, as I got older, there was always something about the Christmas time of the year. And I'm talking in all those years before I became a Christian, before I believed in it. I loved the decorations. I loved the carols, the music. There was just something I sensed about that time of the year. And in college, when I became a Christian and had my first Christmas as a college student who believed in Jesus and looked at the lyrics of the Christmas carols and actually understood what they were saying.
Yeah, that is incredible. And my family, we've always done Christmas. And one of our traditions was getting to pick one present to open Christmas Eve. And so my brother and I would pick very carefully. We hoped it wasn't going to be, you know, the socks or something like that that we would open. We were hoping
socks,
we were picking a toy or something. But in my family, once I had started having my own children, I continued the open one gift on Christmas Eve. And while they were little, I got away with guiding them to the present that was the new Christmas pajamas because I wanted them all in matching pajamas for Christmas morning.
Now, tell us, sweetheart, were they as excited by that gift as you apparently
actually,
were?
Actually, when they were younger, they were. They thought it was really fun to all, you know, they'd all get them and go run and put them on, and they did.
I can't imagine being excited about pajamas at a gift at any age.
Okay, so this is what happened. It started morphing into, as my kids got older, they start going, wait a minute, we know what those pajamas are. What that package looks like. So then they started wanting to pick their own presents. So then they would pick the presents. Well, as the mom who was going to take photos the next morning, I still needed them in those Christmas pajamas. So it kind of morphed into they got to pick one, and then they also got their pajamas on Christmas Eve. So, and I kept up that pajama one. I thought I would do it forever. But as they all married and got older, that tradition did not become as beloved by them. I still loved it. I thought it was really fun. But now I let their spouses take care of that. And I do think it would be fun to do that with grandkids. But that was an adult thing. And we do have, it is really fun to look at Christmas through, you know, when we're kids ourselves, it's interesting. Then when we have children, it boosts it. And then when we have grandkids, amazing.
Looking at it through the eyes of kids, yes, just absolutely rejuvenates us. All right, you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. As a Christian apologist, I hear scorning and ridicule all the time from Bible skeptics and unbelievers. Some churches will still respond to such people with love and understanding. Others do not.
You Christians are such morons. There's no proof that God exists, and only a pea brain would believe in miracles. Wake up! Step into the 21st century. Besides, Christianity is responsible for most of the world's problems.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Relax, my friends. That's not the kind of response you'll get from Skyline Church. We welcome you just as you are, with all your doubts, all your questions, and all your concerns. Your problems with religion are understandable, and I promise at Skyline you'll experience the love of Jesus Christ, not the revenge of a Sith Lord.
Skyline Church. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Dana Siegel, and we are talking about Christmas memories and traditions. And we're going to take a little departure in this segment and just really share kind of a special song with you. It is a Christmas song, and it is my all-time favorite Christmas song. It's called Mary, Did You Know? It's done by many, many, many people, many different kinds of groups over the years. But we have Bob also loves this group, the Pentatonic Group.
Well, and I should say, this is one of Dana's favorite carols, if not the favorite.
It is my favorite,
this particular,
yes,
one has never been one of my favorites, but this version of it, I just love it. So
yeah, and the Pentatonics, it's a five-person group, four males, one female, and they just do an a cappella version of this song that is just beyond. And so we just thought it would be really special tonight to share that with you. And so we hope you just take a few moments to really take in the words. So here is Mary, Did You Know? By the Pentatonics.
Ooh. that your baby boy would one day walk on water.
Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you new? This child that you delivered will soon deliver you.
Mary, did you know that your baby boy will give sight to a blind man?
Mary, did you know that your baby boy will calm the storm with his hand?
Did you know?
Goodness, that song just gets me every time. Anybody who has held a baby, you know, just the miracle of a child. And then to think that Mary was holding God in her arms. And I just think that's amazing when the lyrics are saying, did you know you were kissing the face of God? And I love how the song just wraps in all of the power of God and the miracles that he can do, and you know that Jesus was going to rule. It's just such a profound song. And then to hear how the pentatonics do, I mean, when you listen to that, you can't believe there's
version,
no orchestration
best version
in that.
I've ever heard of this
song.
And even though I love what they're singing about, like I said, I haven't cared for the other versions just musically, but boy, oh boy, they made this one of my favorite carols, just their version. They really did.
And as you're listening, you're sure there's got to be orchestration going on behind them because it's just so full.
Well, it is vocal orchestration, but not with musical instruments.
It is, and only five people are creating
it's
all
incredible.
Of that. So yeah, it really is.
And of course, I doubt that Mary did know she was holding God. She knew it was a miracle.
She
knew the baby came from God.
Yes.
She knew the baby was the Messiah. Years later, after the resurrected Jesus had come, she understood. And thinking back over those years, she was able to think back and go, wow, I was holding
that baby was something.
God. Yeah. She did not understand it was God incarnate at that time.
Yeah. Well, I love that thought. Thank you for letting me share that on our show.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we have a caller calling in with a Christmas memory of his own, I believe. Bill, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show.
Thanks so much, Bob. This is not a childhood memory. In fact, it's adults. Mary Beth and I were both married. We had just returned to our home of origin in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, from San Diego with our year and a half old identical twins. And the memory was sitting in my parents' living room watching the black and white TV with the rabbit ears as the Apollo 8 astronauts circled the moon, and they looked out the window, and we saw the moon in the foreground and the Earth rise in the distance, and they read the first 10 verses of chapter 1 of Genesis. We'll never forget it.
I had forgotten that they did that around Christmas time. I'm remembering now that you say it, but that was pretty incredible.
Did we lose him?
Well, did we lose Bill, or are you still there?
No, I'm still.
Oh, okay. Bill's so in awe by this Apollo flight that he's just speechless.
That is a great. That is a great memory.
And that must have been quite a Christmas for the astronauts too.
It was indeed. I mean, it was just a thrill for all of us. My parents were believers. Both of us grew up in the Christian homes, and it was just our jaws dropped, and we were speechless.
That is awesome.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that memory. That was wonderful.
Thank you, Bill.
You bet.
We'll be right back.
Is there really proof for the resurrection of Christ? How could a loving God send people to hell? Why does the Bible call premarital sex a sin? How will God judge the people who never heard of Jesus? These are but some of the critical concerns keeping honest seekers from considering Christianity. In an interesting, down-to-earth style, Bob Siegel tackles the hardest, most painfully honest questions. Rather than shoving these topics under the rug, Bob shows respect for his readers by providing detailed and compelling explanations. This book will be enjoyed by both skeptics and Christians. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He's got a bag that's filled with toys for boys and girls again. Hear those sleigh bells jingle, jangle, oh, what a beautiful sight. So jump in bed and cover your head, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Dana Siegel, and we were talking about just how Mary must have just been so... In a different place, having a baby, especially as a virgin. And we heard about how difficult that situation must have been as she's trying to explain to Joseph how she's pregnant and so on. And, you know, the angels came in and helped with that and covered that. But I hadn't heard about how I know she went and visited Elizabeth, but I didn't make the connections about how important that visit must have been. And we heard that Mary went to Elizabeth probably for help and just support during this unusual time. It would be difficult in that culture, especially in that time, to be pregnant. And she was betrothed but not married yet. Nobody could fathom how you could get pregnant without having physical relations. So that would have been a stretch.
The story,
or
if you tried to tell them
what
that's
she was
what
saying.
Happened.
Yes. So went to Elizabeth for support for this situation. Elizabeth was older than she was. And so it would be somebody with more life experience and more just to offer in support and maybe even in an advisory role to her, a mentor role. And then finally, that Elizabeth was also in a situation with a miraculous pregnancy happening, and she was too old to have been pregnant and had a miraculous child on its way. And that child that was within her was the amazing John the Baptist to precede Jesus. So it was a pretty cool connection to all of that.
Yes, that was John the Baptist, folks, not to be confused with John the Presbyterian or John the Episcopalian. This was John the Baptist. Well, yeah, Elizabeth was a relative of Mary's. Because of her age, she was probably an aunt. She could have been an older cousin. The word there just says relative, but it was a relation. And absolutely, as you're alluding to, Dana, the encouragement to go to a family member who's older and to get guidance.
And I am in awe of Mary and what she must have had to go through and just how amazing God just set the whole thing up and put it all together and just who was his plan from the beginning to bring Jesus to us to be able to go to the cross ultimately and be able to move on.
Yeah, it was also very common in biblical days. We need to understand when there was a miraculous event that was foretold, some kind of long-range prophecy, it was very common for God to give a short-range prophecy that's going to come true in the immediate future. And what that does is it gives encouragement and faith. So here Mary, who is a virgin, is told that she's going to bear a baby miraculously. Now, what happened with Elizabeth wasn't as much of a miracle, but it was a miracle. She was too old to have children, and she had a child. So it's, oh, and by the way, your aunt, again, could be cousin, but I think probably aunt, your aunt Elizabeth, who was too old to have children, has had a child. And go and visit her. And the same God who made that happen with her is going to give you the faith to believe that it could happen to you. This was not the only time this happened. There are many instances in Scripture of a short-range prophecy. When Saul was told by Samuel the prophet that he was going to become a king, he gave a prediction. He says, when you get home, your brothers are going to come out and say, where were you? And you went out to look for the livestock, but then we worried more about you than the livestock. Doesn't sound like a big deal, but that happened exactly as Samuel said it was going to happen. The idea was, wow, okay, Samuel told me that I'm going to become king, but he also gave this short-range prophecy about what was going to happen later on in the near future with my brothers, and it actually happened. That was very common. So on two counts, needing the mentoring of a beloved relative to encourage her, but also the small prophecy, no, not insignificant, the small prophecy foreshadowing and giving encouragement and faith for the bigger prophecy.
That is a very cool clarification. Thank you for that. I want to ask you to do one more thing similar to that because this is your gift. I remember when you first shared with me several years ago that I know you a tradition for you is reading the Christmas story every year out of the Bible.
I'm the one that made up that tradition.
No.
Hey, you know, God, I've got an idea. I don't think anyone's ever done this before. Why don't I read Christmas story on Christmas right out of the Bible?
I know you
Good
do.
Good one, Bob. Good one, Bob.
I know you do that as something that you are committed to, but
it is an enjoyable tradition.
I know, but what I found interesting when you shared it with me the first time was how you put together different versions from the Gospels out of it. So can you just tell them what you put together?
And when we say different versions, we don't mean one's true and one isn't, but they key in on different things. Matthew starts looking at it from Joseph's point of view. Joseph finds out his wife's pregnant. He knows that she could get stoned to death or at least be held to public disgrace. He wants to put her away quietly. Despite how hurt and confused he is, he's still being merciful. But an angel visits him in a dream and says this child is of God. We hear about that. We hear about King Herod and the wise men going to visit him, saying, where is baby Jesus? And Herod tries to kill the children that are 2 years old or younger because he doesn't want some child prophesied to be king of the Jews. Herod considers himself king of the Jews. That's all in Matthew's account. Luke's account is what you were talking about earlier, Dana. They actually start with the birth of John the Baptist foretold, and then John the Baptist's father and his mother Elizabeth, and then they switch over to Mary, and then Mary goes and visits Elizabeth, and then they go to the part about Joseph and Mary and traveling over for the census and there's no room at the inn. And what's interesting is we always look at manger scenes and the manger scenes have the shepherds and the angels and the wise men. And I love that. I wouldn't want to have a manger scene without the wise men. But the wise men came later. Jesus could have been as old as 2 when the wise men came. And Mary and Joseph were living in a house at that time. That star that came and shone over the place, that wasn't shining over a stable. It was shining in a house. So we're getting very different things. So what Dana's talking about is what I would do is chronologically. I'd start with John the Baptist, and then it's announced to Mary. And then I'd switch back to Matthew and go to the part about. And it's just fun to read it that way because you're kind of getting it in the chronological. chronological order. Mark and John just jump right in, go right to John the Baptist and the baptism of Jesus. So the nativity stories, they're only in the Gospels of Luke and Matthew.
Yeah, and I remember the first year you did that with me. It was just such a cool way to do it. And we just kind of kept flipping around, but you knew exactly where to go and what to do. And it really made the story much fuller and richer. So, you know, as we're talking about Christmas and just the season and what it is, that really is, it is about Jesus and the traditions and the memories. Those are all wonderful things, but it really is about Jesus coming to earth for us to be able to grow and have his ministry and then go to the cross on our behalf so that we can be forgiven of our sins and be cleared. So that really is what this whole season is about. That's really what the delight should be in, is in Christ coming and being born. And so there's the magic. That's not the childhood magic, but it certainly is much more enduring and more meaningful to us as adults.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, I always found Christmas a magical time of the year, even before I was a Christian. But after I understood who we were celebrating, it just became so much more meaningful for me.
Definitely. And I think it becomes more meaningful talking about grandchildren and what they're seeing. You know, when you're seeing it through eyes of children, I know the first time I took my kids to Disneyland, it just reboosted my joy and delight in Disneyland.
Because, and by the way, Disneyland at Christmas time is double really, the magic, which we did just a few weeks ago with our grandchildren.
Yes, we did. We went back to Disneyland for the first time.
It finally opened up again after all the
shutdowns. In November, they were already all decorated for Christmas, and it was wonderful to be back in the park to see all of the Christmas that they do. And Disney, you know, nobody does it like Disney when you're talking about decorating and just making everything full. And they even had shows on the buildings down Main Street. The whole thing goes dark, and then they were projecting things on Main Street. It was really, they took it up another notch. So anyway, the magic of Christmas. We love it.
All right. And like I said, the magic of Dana. I always love it when Dana joins me on the show. And the audience loves it, too. They're always telling her, you should be on more often. And they're right, honey. No pressure. No pressure. All right.
Thank you.
But with or without Dana, I at least will see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.
Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to talk about my latest book, The Many Myths About Ministry. As you know, I'm a Christian apologist, but let me tell you something. In my many years of interactions with skeptics, doubters, and even seekers, I have found that the vast majority of their problems with Christianity stem from previous church experiences. Yes, what's more, many of their concerns are valid and serve as inspiration for this book. While defending the truth of the Bible and the importance of the gospel message, I nevertheless take an honest look at the way Christians interact with each other. From the larger issues of putting our leaders on too high a pedestal, to the unfair judging of the way another person worships, to the unsolicited advice which claims to have been led by the Spirit of God. Of course, and I do believe the Spirit of God speaks, I do, but a lot of times Christians are putting words in his mouth. Who are we kidding? My friends, this simple, easy read will strike a chord of familiarity with anyone involved in church life. It's a call to lay aside the unimportant issues that distract us and return to the heart of Christian community.
The Many Myths About Ministry by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com. and BarnesandNoble.com. Is there really proof for the resurrection of Christ? How could a loving God send people to hell? Why does the Bible call premarital sex a sin? How will God judge the people who never heard of Jesus? These are but some of the critical concerns keeping honest seekers from considering Christianity. In an interesting, down-to-earth style, Bob Siegel tackles the hardest, most painfully honest questions. Rather than shoving these topics under the rug, Bob shows respect for his readers by providing detailed and compelling explanations. This book will be enjoyed by both skeptics and Christians. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.